This ceremony marks an important milestone in the transition of our involvement in Afghanistan. But it's not the end of the story.
So says a top U.S. military leader. It's Tuesday, the 13th of July, and this is VOA Asia. I'm Ira Melman. Also ahead, China seems to be drawing lines of boats in the South China Sea. Cracking vaccine hesitancy in the U.S. is hard to do. The vaccine problems differ in much of Asia. The Olympics host city begins another emergency, and population growth could be handled. It is all on today's VOA Asia. The top U.S. commander in Afghanistan relinquished his command at a ceremony in the Afghan capital of Kabul Monday, taking the United States a step closer to ending its 20-year war. The move came as Taliban insurgents continue to gain territory across the country. General Scott Miller, who has served as America's top commander in Afghanistan since 2018, handed over command of what has become known as America's Forever War in its waning days to Marine General Frank McKenzie, the head of U.S. Central Command. Miller maintained his stance on the importance of the U.S. military mission.
It's important that the military sides set the conditions for a peaceful and political settlement in Afghanistan. We can all see the violence that's taking place across the country, but we know that with that violence, that what is very difficult to achieve is a political settlement. So again, what I tell the Taliban is they're responsible too. The violence that's going on is against the will of the Afghan people, and it needs to stop.
McKenzie, another four-star general, will assume authority from his U.S. post to conduct possible airstrikes in defense of Afghan government forces, at least until the U.S. withdrawal concludes by August 31st.
We will remain focused on four things over the course of the coming period. First, protecting our diplomatic presence in this country. Second, enabling the safe operation of the airport here in Kabul. Continuing to provide appropriate advice and assistance to Afghan national defense and security forces. And finally, as I've noted before, supporting our counterterrorism efforts.
McKenzie will operate from Central Command headquarters in Tampa, Florida. The handover took place in the heavily fortified Resolute Support headquarters in the heart of Kabul at a time of rapid territorial gains by Taliban insurgents across the country. The Afghanistan National Defense and Security Forces, mostly funded by the United States and NATO, have put up resistance in some parts of the country, but overwhelmingly Afghan government troops appear to have abandoned the fight. Afghan special forces are going house to house to clear districts of the country's southern province of Kandahar of Taliban fighters. Reuters' Emily Wither has the tales of one mission.
Afghan special forces begin with a prayer. Reuters joined them on a late-night combat mission in Afghanistan's southern province of Kandahar. They're heading to a district where earlier Taliban fighters and Afghan security forces backed by local police fought for hours. Insurgents had attempted to take the area, unleashing RPGs and heavy machine gun fire. Kandahar is one of the many provinces to see a recent surge in offensives by the Taliban. The group have been emboldened as US-led Western forces near a complete withdrawal from the country after nearly 20 years of fighting. Using night vision, this group swiftly move into Khan Baba village. Their Humvees pocked with bullet holes from previous missions, including some alongside American forces. But the American support has gone, and the special forces are now fending for themselves as they move silently from house to house. This time, the area is abandoned. Airstrikes by the Afghan Air Force pushed back the Taliban fighters. Here's Major Mohammed Din Tasir.
What we heard in the report and what we saw on the scene did not match. In this village, they said that 200 or 300 enemies are here, but we came and spoke with the people and inspected their houses. In fact, the residents had evacuated their families because of the conflict between the government and the enemy, so their children and families didn't get hurt.
It's believed the Taliban is spreading propaganda about how many areas they've captured to spread confusion and fear. In the distance, there is sporadic gunfire. Security personnel injured in the earlier fight are given basic treatment and then evacuated to the nearest base. Moving from area to area, the special forces know it won't be long before they're called on again to respond to another Taliban offensive.
Emily Withers reporting. For more information on our top stories, head on over to voanews.com or any of our many digital platforms. These are some of the stories you can find at voanews.com. Myanmar's Suu Kyi hit by new charges in a Mandalay court. China's technology ministry announces three-year action plan to develop the country's cybersecurity industry, estimated to be worth more than $38 billion. India set to overtake China as the world's most populous nation. South Korea suspends baseball season as the toughest COVID-19 curbs take force. Nepal's Supreme Court reinstates parliament and orders a new prime minister to be appointed. Expanded coverage of these stories and more are on Facebook at VOA Asia, Instagram, Twitter, and on the voanews.com website. VOA Asia continues. I'm Ira Melman. Filipino fisherman Randy Megu has often braved the storms that spring up in the South China Sea, but these days he has a greater fear, seeing a Chinese maritime enforcement vessel on the horizon. Gloria Tso reports.
Filipino fishermen are facing off with China's government off the coast of the Philippines in the South China Sea. It's one of the most hotly contested bodies of water in the world, rich in natural resources and home to a valuable trade route. So who has sovereignty over these waters? China claims much of the sea as its own, including this stretch of water in the Philippines' exclusive economic zone, extending 200 nautical miles from its coast. 5 years ago, an international court ruling in The Hague ruled in favor of the Philippines. But China rejected the verdict and stands by its claims to territory marked by a so-called nine-dash line. Alongside the Philippines, the nine-dash line is also contested by Brunei, Malaysia, Taiwan, and Vietnam. But China has shown no signs of backing down and continues to make military incursions. The situation is leaving fishermen such as Randy Magu fearful for their livelihoods.
We get scared. Sometimes we get chased by rubber boats and are driven far away. Many others who have been harassed have also been shot at by water cannons.
They used to catch 4 to 5 tons of fish in less than a week. Now, if they're lucky, maybe just a few buckets. Magu says China has only gotten more aggressive, sending more of its boats to the area.
The problem here is that in our own fishing territory, we are the ones who are pushed away. We feel that it's as if we are the thieves in our own area because the Chinese Coast Guard doesn't allow us here.
70% of Filipinos want their government to assert its claims, according to an opinion poll last year. Philippine President Rodrigo Duterte made it a campaign issue in 2016. But the firebrand leader has changed his tune since being elected. Relations with China are now a centerpiece of his foreign policy, and he's called it useless to challenge their vast neighbor. After some of his cabinet stepped up their rhetoric early this year, Duterte barred them from speaking out. The fishermen had hoped to secure their grounds after the 2016 ruling, but without enforcement, they see little hope for change.
We did win, but the problem is that the government is not doing anything about it. Since we won, they should be the ones giving us protection. Our own Navy, just like Sir Chris said, our own Navy and Coast Guard should be there and not the Coast Guard of China.
Neither the Philippine Defense Ministry nor Chinese Foreign Ministry responded to a request for comment.
Reuters' Gloria Tso reporting. Here in Washington, the Biden administration has upheld a Trump-era rejection of nearly all of China's significant maritime claims in the South China Sea. The administration also warned China that any attack on the Philippines and the Flashpoint region would draw a U.S. response under a mutual defense treaty. Happening now in Asia, Hong Kong's National Security Police Monday arrested five more people in relation to an alleged bomb plot as political tensions rise amid Beijing's tightening control over that city. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. Thank you for being with us as we continue on VOA Asia. Vaccine hesitancy in the U.S. is proving hard to crack, with roughly one-third of Americans not vaccinated against COVID-19, the disease caused by the coronavirus. The partisan divide over the vaccine continues to hamper efforts to defeat the virus. Michelle Quinn reports.
Areas in the U.S. with low COVID-19 vaccination rates are seeing a rise in hospitalizations, including in adults 18 to 49 years old, who now account for more than 40% of COVID-19-related hospitalizations, according to the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. President Joe Biden said last week it is time to step up outreach to persuade people to get their shots.
We need to go to community by community, neighborhood by neighborhood, and oftentimes door to door, literally knocking on doors, to get help to the remaining people protected from the virus.
Some Republican lawmakers said they were concerned that the federal government was planning to come to people's doors. The Biden administration clarified that the president, a Democrat, didn't mean federal agents would be forcing people to be vaccinated. The administration said the federal government would provide more support to states through what it called surge response teams. The persistent partisan divide over the vaccine appears to be hampering vaccination efforts. A little less than half of Republicans surveyed recently by ABC and The Washington Post said they are vaccinated or will be vaccinated, compared to 93% of Democrats. Dr. Anthony Fauci, the White House chief medical advisor, says it's important to reach the unvaccinated through people they trust. He spoke to ABC this week.
We've got to get away from the divisiveness that has really been a problem right from the very beginning with this outbreak.
COVID-19 hospitalizations have been rising in recent weeks in Arkansas, a state that tends to vote Republican. Just 32% of Arkansans are fully vaccinated, according to the Johns Hopkins Coronavirus Resource Center. Arkansas Governor Asa Hutchinson, a Republican, says vaccine skepticism is tied to conservative beliefs about government. He spoke to ABC this week.
And we just have to answer it just like we have all through history, that you overcome skepticism and mistrust by truth. You overcome resistance and obstinance with saying it's important for our community and it's important for the health of our state and nation.
Looking ahead, the CDC said schools should be fully opened in the fall for in-person learning. But whether students and staff who are fully vaccinated will be required to wear masks may again be a partisan issue. Republican governors of Arkansas and Texas are saying no to students masking, and officials in California, a Democrat-leaning state, are saying yes, because social distancing isn't always possible. Michelle Quinn, VOA News.
Coming up on VOA Asia, COVID and Asia. Stay with us for that.
VOA Asia is on Twitter. Follow us at VOA Asia for developing stories in Asia, perhaps close to you. Our Twitter feed also has updates on programs you can hear and see, with links to easily find them. With VOA Asia, also follow radio program hosts VOA Stevenson and VOA Melman. VOA Asia Twitter. We're always online for you.
This news from VOA Asia. A Tokyo hotel has apologized and removed signs saying Japanese only and foreigners only from elevators after the anti-COVID-19 precaution sparked outrage on social media ahead of the Summer Olympics. All the big stories come your way through the day on VOA Asia Twitter and Facebook. This is VOA Asia. Thailand's health ministry said on Sunday that more than 600 medical workers who received two doses of China's Sinovac vaccine have been infected with COVID-19, as authorities weigh giving booster doses to raise immunity. Reuters' Brian Wood reports.
Officials say that hundreds of medical workers in Thailand have been infected with COVID-19, even after receiving two doses of China's Sinovac vaccine. On Sunday, the country's health ministry said that over 600 of the nearly 700,000 medical personnel who've been fully vaccinated with Sinovac were infected between April and July. Boon Vanasen is the chairman of a Thai healthcare group. He compared Sinovac to other vaccines, like European-made AstraZeneca, and said China's jab is not as effective against the quickly spreading Delta variant.
Here, there were five medical staff infected with COVID-19, and two were admitted to the ICU. This means Sinovac can't protect people from the virus, and the symptoms will be severe compared to those who got the AstraZeneca. It shows that people who were infected with the Delta variant after receiving the Sinovac vaccine can have symptoms as severe as people who haven't received any vaccine at all.
An expert panel has recommended a third dose to trigger immunity for medical workers at risk, according to senior health official Sopon Lamsithawan. He told press on Sunday AstraZeneca or an mRNA vaccine will be made available, quote, in the near term. Thailand is expecting a donation of 1.5 million Pfizer-BioNTech vaccines from the U.S. later this month. Neighboring Indonesia, which has also heavily relied on Sinovac, said on Friday it would give the Moderna vaccine as boosters to medical workers.
That was Brian Wood. The United States is donating 1.5 million doses of Johnson & Johnson vaccine to Nepal, which is struggling to give coronavirus jabs to its population. U.S. Ambassador Randy Berry told reporters at Kathmandu Airport Monday that the single-shot vaccines were a gift through the COVAX facility and were enough to protect 1.5 million people of Nepal. The U.S. is also donating vaccines to several other Asian countries, including Indonesia, Malaysia, and Thailand. Nepal's health minister said the shots would be given to people between the ages of 50 and 54. Making headlines in Asia, U.S. humanitarian aid is a sinister political scheme to put pressure on other countries, a North Korean researcher says, after suggestions from U.S. allies such as South Korea that coronavirus vaccines or other help could promote cooperation. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. As we continue on VOA Asia, Olympic host city Tokyo entered a new state of emergency Monday, less than 2 weeks before the games begin, amid worries about whether the measures could stem a tide in COVID-19 cases. Eve Johnson reports for Reuters.
Less than 2 weeks ahead of the Olympic Games, Tokyo is back under a COVID cloud. Authorities on Monday put Japan's capital city under a state of emergency following a surge in cases, with more than 600 logged on Sunday. Restaurants have been asked to close early and stop serving alcohol. It's the fourth time the government has locked things down since the start of the crisis. For one restaurant manager, it's starting to feel a little arbitrary.
Frankly, we have not had a single day this past year where we operated under regular working hours, and that's just the reality.
Some Tokyo residents agreed, saying that unless the measures cover more than just restaurants, they would be of little use.
It's just completely stupid. The Prime Minister just says what those at the top tell him to say. He's not thinking about the people who are trying to do business.
Meanwhile, security ran a sweep of the media center on Monday, ahead of a formal opening to thousands of journalists. But the venues themselves are likely to remain nearly empty, Organizers announced last week they would ban most spectators, asking residents to watch the competitions on TV. The state of emergency will run all the way through the Olympics until August 22nd, shortly before the beginning of the Paralympics.
Eve Johnson reporting. As the United Nations marked World Population Day, July 11th, its experts said there was no perfect population number and that human innovation will continue to manage and outpace the growth in the number of humans living on the planet. VOA's Laurel Bowman has the story.
It took most of human history for the world's population to reach 1 billion people. But over the past 200 years, that number has increased sevenfold, according to the United Nations and other data. The world's population now stands at about 7.7 billion, and forecasters expect Earth will cross the 11 billion people mark around the turn of the next century.
Behind the numbers is an enormous success in global health. Above all things, it's one of the great consequences of development that as human health has improved and mortality has declined, there has been an enormous growth of the human population.
The UN Population Fund tracks demographic trends and works with governments around the world on planning. The agency's experts report a big need to manage urbanization, as more than half of the world's population now lives in and around cities. Other experts have called for transnational migration plans. Large numbers of people may also be playing a role in climate change, but this issue is complex, according to the United Nations.
Very, very small amount of contribution to emissions are coming out of the developing world. So to focus on the numbers of fertility and family planning and growth in developing countries and to suggest that that is a cause of climate change is one of the great, let's say, detours to acknowledging that the responsibility lies in the global north on patterns of consumption.
And what about that international COVID-19 baby bust we've all been hearing about? The downward trend in births will pass, say experts, and they argue that access to health care for women will, over time, help regulate population growth.
When people are able to have the number of children that they want, what we see is that in general, over time, people have fewer children, in part because the investments in children have risen. So the affordability of children, the cost of children, has increased. With the cost of education, for example.
Meantime, many top demographers say there is no perfect population number and that human innovation will continue to outpace population growth. Laurel Bowman, VOA News, Washington.
Billionaire Richard Branson reached space Sunday aboard his own company's rocket ship, taking astrotourism a step closer to reality. Branson, who's 71, and a crew of five members from his tourism company flew to an altitude of 86 kilometers over the New Mexico desert. Branson conveyed the experience in a statement from space.
To all you kids down there, I was once a child with a dream, looking up to the stars. Now I'm an adult in a spaceship with lots of other wonderful adults looking down to our beautiful, beautiful Earth. To the next generation of dreamers, if we can do this, just imagine what you can do. Hey!
Come on out, Richard.
Virgin Galactic Holdings Incorporated issued a statement saying that VSS Unity successfully reached space, completing the company's fourth rocket-powered spaceflight. The Sunday flight was the 22nd test of VSS Unity and the first test flight with a full crew on board. You've been listening to VOA Asia. Like us on Facebook, VOA Asia. Follow us on Twitter at VOA Asia. And you can find us on Instagram and YouTube and at voanews.com. Thank you for joining us. Thanks to our service chief, Diane Gao, and our VOA Asia team. Chris Cascayo, Doug Bernard, Keith Lane, Amy Heibels, and Jim Stevenson. I'm Ira Melman. Stay safe and enjoy the day ahead.